Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. My name is Marcus. Sarah's there.
It's me.
And Chris is over there.
Hello.
Now, recently, ladies and gentlemen, we've seen the Suez Canal get blocked up by a big old ship that went slightly off to the side. I say slightly. For the average Joe on the street, nobody realised what a huge problem this would or even could cause. Some things that look easily fixable or perhaps not that big a deal can have a huge consequence. Today, we're answering this question: what small things can have a big effect?
So, the first thing that sprang to my mind when we were talking about this was something quite small, that if you don't deal with it can have a massive effect, is bills. Bills and fines.
Oh, hello.
Right, it doesn't matter how small the bill is, it can be for £3.50. But I didn't realise this, even that, if you leave a bill unpaid for, you know, ages and ages and ages, that can have huge effects. And I've read about people who, like, couldn't get mortgages and things like that because they had an outstanding bill for some tiny amount, you know, is it left over on a water meter or whatever it was. And it's caused them huge problems further down the line. And, you know, I say this, I know that, you know, especially if you're in a bit of a precarious financial situation, bills can be scary. And I know some people don't even like opening them. You just shove them, you know, under the sofa or whatever. But dealing with them earlier, even if it's, you know, £3.50, it's the best thing to do.
Have the government employed you to say this? The council. You're working for the council now. Yeah. Pay
what
your bills, people. Stay
what
in school and pay your bills. That's the Sarah way.
I once had a bill through from a previous property I'd rented from the council tax saying you owe £700 or something in unpaid bills. And I was like, oh, no, this is one of those. So I just thought, oh, I'll just stretch this out a bit, and decided to write back and say I'd like an itemization of every bill you sent and my payments made.
Wow.
And they just wrote back, said, actually, we got it wrong. We owe you 700 quid.
No.
I was like, oh, ka-ching. Yeah,
what?
So I went to the States on holiday. Yeah. It's always good. It's always good to open the bill, Sarah, and it's always good to query it if you're not sure.
How far does £700 get you? Where in the States did you go?
It was, I went in January, and I think the flights were less than 400 quid. I mean, it didn't pay for the whole holiday.
Tell you what, though. But
it was it.
Yeah. That's, it's always good to query those bills.
That is amazing. And I've heard, I think it was, I want to say it was a comedian who posted, it was quite a while ago now, I think it was a Twitter thread, about they were given this parking ticket.
Joe Lycett, I think it was.
It was, yes, it was Joe Lycett. Yeah, when he was saying, well, I want photographic evidence. And he pursued it, and he pursued it, and he pursued it. And I did he end up getting out of the ticket?
I can't quite remember, but there was a guy who, I don't think this was Joe Lycett. I think this was, I don't know, anonymous person on the internet, perhaps. Although if that's wrong, then forgive me that person. But they said, you know, the bank said, you know, you owe us, say, I don't know, £300 or something. And they replied with a picture of a, you know, a dog, which they'd drawn and say, I value this at £300, you know, sort of thing. And it just sort of goes back and forward from there. But you're right, bills. I mean, we hear, you know, the odd horror story of celebrities who maybe have been mismanaged and they didn't pay the taxes or something. And then years later, Inland Revenue or whoever it is come along and say, oh, by the way, you owe us £2.5 million because it's just been racked up and racked up, and they're just bang in debt, and career can be over or something like that. Yeah. Terrible behaviour. Absolutely terrible.
Just deal with those bills early on.
Deal with the bills and don't steer your ship into the sides of canals.
Those are my two favourite pieces of advice,
I mean, I'm quite sure it was something to do with the weather, but I did quite like this before we move on from the Suez Canal. Ben Jenkins on Twitter said, imagine being the captain of the first ship to pass through the Suez after it gets unblocked, knowing that you have the potential to do the funniest thing that anyone has ever done, ever. Over 300,000 likes.
Wow.
I mean, I think the average captain of one of these ships, who probably spends a lot of time on their own or with just a few others, you know, might not, I might be very, very judgmental of me to say, might not have such a kind of wicked sense of humour when the, you know, but that would be
Amazing.
But if you were the next captain through, you would be bricking it as well, going like, oh, I can't do it. Like, yeah. Imagine it all goes wrong and I've blocked it up again.
Yeah, I've gone through this canal so many times in my career, but like you choke at the final minute, just can't do it.
It would be awful. Chris, what leaps to mind when we think of small things that can have a big effect?
Checking when you book to go on holiday, check local festivities. And the reason I say that is when I went to Sri Lanka, like any true Brit on holiday, I plan on having a beer or a glass of wine.
Oi, oi.
We went to Sri Lanka for 2 weeks, and there was at least three national holidays in which you couldn't buy alcohol.
No.
So we got there, and I mean, you could, because they would charge you more money, and they'd say that's cream soda, not wine, and then you taste it, it was clearly wine. But there was that. I had that in Sri Lanka, and then I also had it when I went to Miami. But it was the complete opposite, where my wife and I had had a holiday across the States. Decided to finish off in a nice hotel in South Beach in Miami. Thought it'd be really relaxing, rooftop pool. And we get there, and it's like urban weekend, and it was so crazy busy. Police were everywhere, helicopters were everywhere. Mm-hmm. The whole place stank of weed, and it wasn't the ending to the holiday that I dreamt of. And so, check local festivities and festivals before you book.
So, the small thing is checking the local festivities. What's the big effect that has? It is just on your holiday.
Could ruin your holiday in terms of
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, especially with those two holidays, I spent a lot of money on them. So you've saved up for years to go on these holidays.
You should get into the council, Chris.
I was about to say, contest a couple of bills.
See,
you've
got the outstanding payments.
Write to them and tell them they owe me money.
Yeah, right. Can I suggest a small act of carelessness?
Ooh, always.
Can have a huge thing. Forest fires.
Oh, that's a good one.
Someone throws a cigarette out. Well, it's a good example, I think I meant to say, Sarah. You do hate trees.
I just can't wait till we get rid of them all. That's what I say. Keep cutting them down, lads. Keep cutting them down.
Any given day, you can see Sarah on her digger ploughing through forests.
Anytime I'm walking around London, I see a tree just... Spit on it.
Get me to Brazil. I'm going to have a crack at the rainforest. Forest fires. According to National Geographic, an average of 72,500 wildfires cleared on average 7 million acres of US land each year since 2000. Double the number since the 1990s. In 2015, the largest wildfire season recorded in US history burned more than 10 million acres of land. And they are often, not always, but they're often caused by a small act of carelessness. Oh. And it's such a huge, huge thing.
Yeah. If I could park the fact that they destroy people's homes and stuff, I have actually heard that a forest fire is quite good for the vegetation in the long run. So,
okay. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, something to do with it goes through the topsoil and gets into things that...
It's a sort of a...
I'm making stuff up now.
Well, but if indeed what you're saying has any truth in it, Chris, and I'm not sure it does, so I'm standing at a safe distance.
Never let the facts get away in a good story.
I'm very much socially distanced from you on this point. But I think there might be something in that, but you would obviously do it in a kind of a managed way.
Yes. They manage it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
I don't think they just say, lads, just chuck a cigarette over there and, they'll thank us in a couple of hundred years' time or something like that. What about a small act of defiance, though, Chris?
Go on.
I'm thinking Rosa Parks.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Yeah. US Congress has called her the First Lady of Civil Rights and the Mother of the Freedom Movement. And it's well deserved, but essentially she just was having none of a bus driver's order to vacate a row of seats, which was just reserved for white people in the 50s in Alabama and in the US, which is of course abhorrent at any point in history. And she wasn't the first person to resist this idea, I'm sure, but apparently the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People believes she was the best candidate for seeing through a court challenge after her arrest for civil disobedience in violating the segregation laws.
I guess with that one, and also with your the previous one with the fire, that there's momentum, isn't there? Like, as you said, it's kind of the tipping point. I think, is it Malcolm Gladwell has a book out about the tipping point?
That's right, yeah.
And very much so, like, these little things can seem slightly innocuous. And as you said, like, there has been many people that protested against oppression before Rosa Parks. However, at the right moment, with the right momentum, with all the kind of winds in the right direction, it can really just change everything.
Yeah. So. Well, indeed, and to go back to the Suez Canal, you hear about, oh, you know, a ship sort of run aground. As I say, your average person on the street is thinking, oh, that's a bit misfortunate. Oh, does that normally happen? Is this a particularly bad one? Well, and then, of course, the evidence comes to light and you think, oh, bloody hell, yeah, of course. You know, that that is a pretty big problem, you know.
You do think, like, how have we got away with it that long without this being a problem? And surely there's a plan B.
Yeah, I would have thought not just get a digger in to just kind of try and...
A tiny digger.
Sarah's digger they borrowed. But you know, like when you go bowling and with someone who's a bit crap, or when you're a child and you have the sort of sausages down the gutters.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't...
The
you should have that.
Sausages?
Or whatever you want to call them. What would you call them?
They're called in Surrey.
It was in Edinburgh, actually.
Sorry, Marcus, carry on.
Not that much different. You know, the blow up sort of those sort of inflatable cushion things that you put down the gutter. So essentially, you can't get zero.
Sarah's
points.
Pulling a confused face for what? Everyone who can't see her.
Have you ever been bowling? Do you understand?
They just flip the sides down. Did you not have flippable sides?
Oh, you could. That would be one. It depends which bowling alley you went to. Yeah.
Wow.
So you can do that.
I'm sorry, you've just blown my mind right now.
Yeah.
How did they inflate these sausages? I've never seen them.
I'm intrigued by the sausages.
Using air. That's how it is. Yeah, it did. You could have inflated ones at the side, and off they go. Here come the sausages. And wow. Or you could have ones that were perhaps more advanced. But either way, I'm
sorry,
thinking
Marcus.
Of those inflatable things. They need them down the sides of the canal.
Yes. That's where we were going.
Yeah.
I had no idea where we'd gone then, but we got stuck.
Yeah, just much like that ship, of course, you know, where if we had the sausages up, then we'd be all right.
So, I see what you're saying. It would have just bounced off, and then it would have bounced off the other side, and then it would have eventually got through.
It would have been seen as a bit of a laugh. Give the crew a bit of a... You know, they've been at sea for goodness knows how long. Here we go, boys, down the canal. Hey! Bomb, bomb, they're whacking away on the sides.
Do you know what I'm going to love? I reckon in years to come, we're going to see them come up with a slightly similar idea, and you're going to massively say that was because of your ideas.
I'm not going to try and claim any money. Or should I, Chris? Maybe I'll get 700 quid.
Yeah,
When lockdown ends,
hey, look,
I'll be off to America.
It's the small things.
Yeah.
They start out small.
It's the very small things that start out small. We talked about is honesty the best policy, but obviously a lie, Sarah. Mm.
They can spiral out of control.
It is. I mean, we sort of covered that ground on a very recent previous pod. But any other kind of examples or thoughts on this particularly, Sarah?
Well, this is taking us in a slightly different direction.
Okay.
But something small which can have a really big effect. Now, this might just be because I'm a very sensitive sleeper. I'm very intolerant of anything that disturbs my sleep. Extremely intolerant. Mosquitoes.
One mosquito
in the room.
Yeah.
And like, so many people I know are able to just roll over and go to sleep and it's no biggie. Firstly, if I can hear it, I'm not sleeping.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. Mm. And then secondly, if I do get bitten in the night, if by some miracle I've gone to sleep, I get bitten in the night, I don't know what it is about me and mosquito bites, but it will be swollen, it'll be itchy, I will be whinging about it for the rest of the holiday. Mm-hmm. It will not only ruin my time, it'll ruin everybody else's time. Mm-hmm. It's something tiny, but it has massive effects.
I like what you've done there. I totally agree with you. I remember one of the worst things that nature could do is if a mosquito goes very close to your ear hear that zzz, that buzzing sound, it makes my skin crawl and it makes me really angry. I think, how dare you come so close and fire off one of my senses in such an intrusive way.
But I did not invite you into this room. You have no right to be here. You did not ask permission. I'm the one who's paid for this. Get out. Leave me alone. Stop waking me up. Oh, even talking about it now, I'm getting angry.
Well, have you ever been on a holiday which requires your bed or sleeping quarter to have a to have a mosquito net. I've been in the rainforest before in Ecuador, and you put down the mosquito net, you turn the lights off, you make sure you quickly nip in there, you go to bed, and suddenly you hear one, and there's just one, and you get your torch out, and for the next half an hour you're trying to find this little sod which is in your protected area. Took me about half an hour, but I did get it in the end. But yeah, that is very frustrating.
That just sounds hellish.
I once heard if you eat Marmite, then they're less likely to bite you. I think it's because it has vitamin B or something in there, and they're put off by the scent of that. It was either that or someone was trying to stitch me up and told me to cover myself in Marmite, and they'd be less likely to bite me.
Is this one of your half facts, Chris, that you kind of, you know?
It's just that kind of show, isn't it? It's the end of the season.
We just throw it around whatever we want.
Make stuff up.
No repercussions.
One area where small acts can have huge implications is, of course, the theatre of war. Where just something small, something little, little piece of information, or somebody decides to actually hang on a minute. What if that combination of the code we haven't tried or something like that? But a small.
When you said theatre of war, made me feel like it was an actual theatre, like Drury Lane.
But that's what it's called, isn't it? It's the theatre of war.
Yeah.
I know, but I pictured a theatre, which just was.
This
about
is even
war.
More serious, Chris. Even more serious than the theatre.
Well, a small act of violence can. Kickstart goodness knows what. Have you ever heard of the story of Alfie and the Kaiser?
No.
Kaiser Wilhelm II, Queen Victoria's oldest grandson, who apparently spoke English without an accent, supposedly. Although I have heard Queen Victoria spoke English with a slight German accent, but I digress, ladies and gentlemen.
It's not like Kaiser, us.
Yeah, you've heard the show before. and if you haven't, you're very welcome. Kaiser Wilhelm II, he was holidaying near Devon by the beach when he was 19 years old.
Lovely.
And Chris is from Devon, so he's nodding approvingly. One afternoon, he was bored, thought he'd just entertain himself by throwing stones at some beach huts.
Classic.
And the huts were owned by... Yeah, very naughty. Not the worst thing he did, though, in his life. The huts were owned by one Philip Price, who was a mere citizen, a peasant described by Wilhelm's teacher. And his 16-year-old son, Alfie, was on duty that day, and Alfie told him, apparently, to stop doing this, and as the story goes, Wilhelm II replied, "Don't you know who I am?" And Alfie responded that he didn't care and ended up punching him on the nose and giving him a bloody nose. Fight was broken up, blah 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 blah. But some say that this started or fueled Kaiser Wilhelm II's hatred of Britain, which had some sort of influence with his decision to go to war with Britain and the allied countries. Now, again, a huge step there. Of course, there were so many things happened, but historians might suggest that this was also due to his complex relationship with his English mother, and he had a withered arm, which he blamed his English doctor for, apparently. But
I
this
feel like
story,
he's pinning a lot on England right now.
Indeed. Or back then, Sarah. He's long gone.
Yeah.
But the story is it became an emblem of the British fight against the Germans, and British soldiers often would sort of say, "Right, come on, let's give the Kaiser a punch on the nose," and it was one of the expressions of the war. So this small story, I mean, I think it would be ridiculous to suggest it started the First World War, but it certainly had a big was a part of the war story told by certain people.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, whenever, you know, whenever they do sort of an origin story for villains and that kind of thing, there's always one thing, and it's usually not a very big thing.
That's right.
That gives them their impetus to go on and be a villain, you know, decide when they grow up they want to be a villain.
You're absolutely right.
There's always something, isn't there?
Yeah, Chris is nodding his head frantically.
I am. I was thinking about an analogy that didn't work, so I'm going to stop. I was thinking, like Batman's parents, but actually that's quite a big deal, having your parents killed and then turning into Batman, so it doesn't work.
Absolutely, yeah. But talking of, you know, sort of history of Britain and all the rest of it, you know, some people suggest that Britain's love for tea was instrumental in the Industrial Revolution taking off. Because people would sort of gather together people gather together in large groups and sort of discuss over a cup of tea. Because we know this, if you've ever worked in an office, there's this kind of tradition of, you know, at 11 o'clock or 3 o'clock, you know, might sit down for a cup of tea. Not in all offices, but that's a thing that happened.
not that I agree with the concept of empire, blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
But I have the expression that the British Empire was built on a cup of tea is probably based at that time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And actually, I read, have you ever read the book Cosa Nostra about the rise of the mafia from Sicily? And they put it down to lemons. That again, because tea was such a big factor within the empire and exported everywhere, that people drank it a lot with lemon.
Yeah.
So therefore lemon, and also cleaning products had a lot of lemon in the early days, that therefore lemon production became highly valued. And that in, I think it was Sicily, that because lemons are so valuable, that the mafia started this racketeering sort of racket around protection and looking after that as well. So again, the humble lemon.
That is funny,
the birth
isn't
it? Of organized crime.
Well, yeah, and blimey. But as you say about, you know, empire and tea and so on, you know, a much more sort of horrific and damning assessment would be that, you know, Britain, whoever kickstarted the British people's love for tea, I mean, it came from abroad, of course, and then it would eventually go through from the elite to the middle classes to the working classes and so on. And they say, like, a lot of the sugar plantations and the slavery and all the misery, to say the least, that was caused by is because people in Britain and perhaps other maybe European countries, I don't know, but certainly in Britain, they liked a bit of sugar in their tea.
And I mean, you think it tastes very nice, and well, they had to put some sugar in it.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that we're talking, we're taking huge swathes of history here and just, you know, summing them up in a little sentence or whatnot. It's never stopped us before, damn it all.
Yeah, so you would never any other way.
I feel like we've done it a lot on this show today.
Indeed. But I don't want to sort of disrespect, you know, the history books or and all the rest of it, but it is true, you know, that Britain's love of tea, you know, the effects that's had on the world and the country, for, you know, awful business, as we just sort of said, and horrible stuff and so on, it is you know, quite remarkable, really.
This is reminding us of we did a show quite a while ago now about sliding doors moments.
Yes.
And I talked about it then, I couldn't help but be reminded of, you're talking about food and history, Ed Miliband's bacon sandwich comes back into the mind.
You go on, remind
thing.
People.
Did you blame? Did you blame?
Yeah, I honestly believe that if Ed Miliband had eaten just, like, I don't know, a tuna mayo sandwich instead of the bacon, things would have all turned out very differently in Britain. Well,
you don't think Brexit would have happened?
Nope.
For those abroad, so Ed Miliband was pictured eating a bacon sandwich, and he looked a bit silly.
Does anyone look good eating a bacon sandwich? Like, there was food coming out of his mouth. He didn't look very statesmanlike. Didn't look well. Obviously, in hindsight, now that we've got Boris Johnson as a prime minister, you know what does a prime minister look like? But he didn't look like a prime minister. And
can we pull that thread a bit more? So you're saying if Ed Miliband had eaten a sandwich that wasn't overflowing and he didn't look like a wally, then he may, you know, let's say he got in and then Brexit wouldn't have happened. And then the argument would be that, you know, Trump got in America because of Brexit and the kind of...
No Trump.
Yeah, all of that is down to
it's all that
a
sandwich.
Bacon sandwich.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit of a leap to bring Trump into that, I have to say.
No.
Well, because of the Cambridge Analytica leap, links and stuff. And they got Trump on board because they said we were behind Brexit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Blimey.
Anyway, I'm sorry. I know I've mentioned it before, but to this day, I believe that small thing had a huge impact. Yeah.
But then without that small thing, would North and South Korea have kissed and made up?
Wow, there you go.
Oh, boy.
Would America
There's always become, a silver lining.
Would America become great again? You know, that's what that was that.
True.
I do find it interesting, though, that... As we were doing this, there was a little flock of parakeets that flew past the window, and there is a colony of parakeets in London and the southeast
of
England.
Love the London parakeets.
Yeah,
it's such a weird thing because obviously they're sort of tropical birds.
Bright
they shouldn't
green.
Be here. And as I say that, I realised how kind of extreme right wing that could sound. They're tropical. They shouldn't be. I'm very much saying that they're not their natural habitat for these beautiful birds. We're very lucky to have them here, of course.
They enhance our society.
Yeah, but there's so many theories on how they came to be here. But such a small thing. So people say from they were used on a film set, to Jimi Hendrix released them, whatever it was. It was quite clearly a small thing. And now you can see them in so many places around London and even around Surrey.
The first few times I saw them, I genuinely was like, am I having some kind of breakdown?
Mm. What mushrooms did I pick for the
I'm pretty sure I just saw a parakeet and people went, no, they are real. So yeah, next time you're
on
in
the
London.
Back of a unicorn. Yeah, you are hallucinating.
Parakeet's the least you promise. Mm. Yeah.
Something I might argue that it's a very small act that some people did change the world, definitely certain countries, is the individuals who introduced football to certain countries.
Oh, so here Alexander, we go.
Well, it's Alexander Watson Hutton, that he's a school teacher from Glasgow. He's also nicknamed the father of Argentine football. I mean, what a title! Considering all the incredible moments and players and whatnot Argentina have given to the game of football, it was all because a school teacher went over there and taught some of the pupils how to play the game. And the Association Argentine Football League was the first football league outside of the British Isles to be established. Although, I mean, it only lasted for a season, but then it came back a year or two later and was formed in 1893, and eventually became what is now known as the Argentine Football Association.
All right,
all
I'll
because
allow
he liked
that
football,
that
he introduced it. Yeah, I think that's
to
not bad.
Yeah.
But football is such a dominant thing in so many countries. I mean, especially in a country like Argentina, it's one of the most passionate places. And as I say, what they have contributed to the game of football has been utterly incredible. World champions twice, just to say the least. All of it because of a small act, Christopher, of a school teacher thinking, you know what, these boys might like to kick this ball around.
Yeah, it caught on like a wildfire.
Well played, sir. Any more for any more?
I've got a little positive one that I think should make a big difference.
Go on.
I've just found out about this from my wife. Moisturizer with sunscreen. That should make a big difference.
I'm because so glad then... you've caught on.
I mean, I haven't got it yet. She keeps telling me I should do it. I think it's probably because she's thinking I'm looking older than I want to. But that can make a big difference to skin cancer and also to our search for perennial youth.
Yeah, I've heard apparently sunscreen, wearing sunscreen is like the one biggest thing you can do to stop yourself looking older.
There you go. Marcus is pulling the same face of disgust that Sarah just pulled when he talked about football.
I mean, I talk about, we talk about Rosa Parks, we talk about Kaiser Wilhelm II, godfather or the father of Argentine football, and you just say, mix in whatever you just said. I can't even bring myself to say it.
Sunscreen and moisturiser.
Sarah, do you have anything to finish on before we break for Easter?
I've got one nice little one to finish us off. A little thing that we can all do, which I think can make a massive difference, is
recycle.
That is good. if it's not being burned, apparently it gets burned a lot. No, I think if people remember your name, it makes a huge difference. I can think of a couple of friends of mine who are so good with names, and they will kind of use people's names in conversation. Mm-hmm. And there's something about it that, like, I don't know, when someone I've only met maybe once remembers me, it makes me feel really kind of known and really valued. And so I want to get better at it, especially as, you know, now that in the UK we're just starting to come out of lockdown, might actually meet some new people for the first time in more than a year. That's something I want to try and do because I feel like I know it's only small, but I do think it makes quite a big difference.
Like it.
I must say, I've appreciated... because I'm not brilliant at remembering names, although I am trying to get better. I appreciate Zoom because it has the name on there.
Oh,
so there's
that.
The amount of people I now know their names because of a Zoom call is fantastic. So now it looks like I'm better at these things than I am. So I worry about meeting new people now.
Well, to close yourself off to the world, pal.
Yeah.
You know enough people, don't you?
Yeah. I'm done now.
Yeah. I'm done. What a man.
Well, completed there we are, that game.
There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers. Yes, we're going to take a few weeks off for Easter. Give ourselves a little bit of a refresher and get some chocolate eggs inside us, which should be enjoyable. But thank you very much for your continued support and listenership. We do very much appreciate it. If you'd like to give us a little review on Apple or wherever you get your pods, then please do. It helps others to discover the show. But we will be back in a few weeks. We'll be back sooner than you think for more scintillating chat like this, if I may say so myself. So there we are. It's been a pleasure. Oh, check us out on social media at AQQAPod. And don't be afraid to get in touch. But until a few weeks' time, thanks very much, Sarah.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thanks very much, Christopher.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you soon.